I am Planta on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. The author of one of the year's most talked about books joins me now. Marcy MacDonald is the author of The Armageddon Factor, The Rise of Christian Nationalism in Canada. It's gotten a lot of press over the last week or so. In this book, the author contends that Canada isn't far off from our American neighbors, where fundamentalist Christians wield tremendous power over the politics of the country. The culture wars in the United States has long been a fascinating topic for me, and this book suggests the groundwork is being done now to influence the government, namely that of Stephen Harper. We're seeing some policy shifts from the government, such as on abortion, same-sex marriage, and in foreign policy, namely in the Middle East. Critics of the book call it anti-Christian, as she names some of the names that are active in the movement, as well as some of the beliefs they espouse, such as that Canada has a biblically ordained role to play in the final days before Armageddon and the second coming of Christ. Marcy MacDonald is an award-winning journalist and former Paris and Washington bureau chief for Maclean's, as well as a writer for U.S. News and World Report. The book is published by Random House. Please welcome to the Plant Online program in Vancouver this morning, Marcy MacDonald. Good morning, Ms. MacDonald.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
The attention that the book's gotten already, was that one of the goals, was to stoke some debate about this government and the people around it?
No, in fact, it's been stunning. The book hasn't even been out a full week. And I actually worried because I had written about this in the Walrus magazine 4 years ago. And so I had lots more information and lots more dots to connect. But I was worried that everybody would yawn and say she doesn't have anything new, because I was trying to lay out the geography of a movement that's building here, 30 years behind that in the United States, but with the same goals, in fact. And I was worried that that people would say, oh, there's not strong enough evidence, this can't happen here. And in fact, friends were saying, this can't happen here, Canada's different than the United States, too moderate, too tolerant for the religious right ever to put down roots. What's amazing to me is that once the book was put to bed, we have a long lead times in publishing, the government seems to have cooperated brilliantly in helping me prove my case. There have been headlines almost every week about some new initiative or defunding initiative or the G8 initiative on maternal and child health care announcing suddenly that it would not include abortion and leaving it open for some weeks about whether it would even include family planning. So, in fact, it's a total accident that the book came out when there were almost weekly headlines about whether or not Stephen Harper was openly courting the religious right with some of these many, many moves.
But by what you're reporting in the book, are you trying to warn us?
Well, it seemed to me that the mainstream media, which isn't at all geared to cover religion, I'm not blaming any of my colleagues, was not really catching on to what was happening, the extent I was stunned. I knew there was a debate that had emerged noisily over the same-sex marriage issue, but most people assumed that after the legislation went through and those forces were defeated in Parliament, that things had quieted down, they'd gone away. In fact, the determination of these groups was steeled so that this sort of thing never happened again. And they put down very, very sophisticated organizational roots. So that much of that was unknown. These organizations have come to be quoted by journalists in Ottawa as if, for instance, the Institute of Marriage and the Family Canada is not connected to James Dobson's Focus on the Family Canada. So I was trying to connect the dots and lay out this geography. Is it a wake-up call? If we go down this route, I think it's a fair question to ask, how much religiosity do we want in our public debate and policies? And do we want to end up with a sort of vitriolic polarization that we see happening now in the United States 30 years later?
Well, we've always had in Canada religious groups or the fringes thereof lobbying government, right? I mean, when we look at Quebec up to the Quiet Revolution, religion's always played a big part there.
Well, Quebec was actually an anomaly in the Canadian spectrum, where under Maurice Duplessis, religion was a huge, it was considered hand in hand with the Duplessis government. The church decided reading lists, ran hospitals and all schools, so on. But there was a huge backlash, as we know, in the 60s, and in fact, some blame the closeness of that alliance for the hugeness of the backlash against religion being in public life in Quebec. Quebec is the most secular province. In Alberta, there was more of a paradox, really. You have two preachers, William Eberhard and Ernest Manning, who had Sunday radio shows all through their premiership. But when they ran the province, by and large, there wasn't a social conservative agenda in the same way. What we have with Stephen Harper is actually a party that set out, announced, in fact, that it was setting out to use religion as an electoral strategy, as a party-building strategy to appeal to religious and social conservatives on moral issues. And I see that as a slippery slope.
You mentioned that he uses it as an electoral strategy, Stephen Harper. How much of that also comes from, say, personal convictions? Is he a terribly religious person?
Well, we all know that he's an evangelical who grew up in the United Church and then had some sort of a faith experience and joined the Christian Missionary and Alliance Church, which is a very middle-of-the-road evangelical denomination. And everyone's personal faith is their own business, except that the religious right, in this case, has been boasting that Stephen Harper was one of their own, a born-again prime minister. I think that basically he is a much more cerebral Christian than most people think, and that this is tactical, not out of personal conviction. In the old days of the Reform Party, Stephen Harper was never part of the social conservative coalition, the Family Values caucus that the party had. He was never considered one of their own. But he announced in 2003, when he'd taken over the leadership of the Alliance Party, that he was going to shift the strategy of the party in order to broaden its base toward courting what he called theocons, religious conservatives, along policy lines that would appeal across faith lines. So not just to the conservative Christians who were the Reform Party base and the Alliance base, but to conservatives in many faiths and many of the new ethnic communities in Canada who found the liberalism of the liberals too liberal. And so it's been a very smart strategy, and it's paid off to some extent, but I think it's important to look at what's happened when the Republicans appealed to the same groups and just how the debate has evolved there. Do we want this same element to dominate politics here?
Well, what does the Christian right, what do they believe in? I mean, this idea of Christian reconstructionism?
Well, that's a very, very small element of what we broadly call the evangelical community, which is a huge spectrum, and I try and make that clear in my book. Evangelicals can be very left-leaning, and they do marvelous work in eco-justice and peace issues and poverty issues. Not all evangelicals are conservative, but there's a small group of the evangelical, particularly the Pentecostal community, that is what I call Christian nationalists as a way of best explaining. They want to create a Christian Canada. The phrase they use is reclaiming Canada for Christ. They argue Canada used to be a Christian nation. It ought to be returned that way. And there is a destiny that Canada has that's spelled out in the Bible, in the Old Testament, Psalm 72, verse 8, which was chosen as the country's motto at Confederation. And he shall have dominion from sea to sea and from the rivers to the ends of the earth. And they believe that way back in the times of King David and King Solomon, when this psalm was apparently written, long before the birth of Christ, long before the discovery of the New World, Canada's geography was distinctly described, prophetically described in this verse, and Canada has a special and unique role to fulfill in the end times, so that this gives them a sense of urgency about accomplishing this goal of becoming a Christian Canada. And, of course, that would mean outlawing abortion and outlawing same-sex marriage as just the two biggest bottom-line issues.
Now, we don't know if Stephen Harper actually believes in Christian Reconstructionism or Dominionism.
It would surprise me hugely if he did.
But
I'm not asserting that, in fact.
No, but there are people who believe that who have some connection to him, right?
Well, that's what surprised me. To me, these ideas seemed quite out of the mainstream. And when I discovered that, in fact, two of these key groups had access to Parliament Hill, had met over 300, they say, MPs and senators have been receiving letters of endorsement at their rallies from the Prime Minister, have been invited to VIP receptions after the throne and budget speech, even used in his electoral campaigns as backdrops. It surprised me, to say the least.
Now, isn't it just speculation that if Harper gets a majority government, that these people will have great influence on his government, his thinking, and what they'll do?
Well, it's of course speculation, and little would I know the mind of Stephen Harper. But he has realized in this last year and a half, as the economy fell apart and he was obliged, probably against his better nature, to institute economic policies that infuriated the economic conservatives, economic libertarians especially, in his party: higher deficits, increased spending. So the base that is his natural base, where he might feel most comfortable, the economic conservatives, were his fiercest critics. He could not count on them. Some were calling for him to step down at one point. So he began to realize that social conservatives, to whom he'd largely given short shrift on the policy stage, were a much more reliable base. They were a bit miffed with him because he had given them so little, but he moved toward being much more overt in his outreach efforts and in his policy efforts, and we've seen in the last 6 months many surprising initiatives. And I think, of course, it all came to a head over the debate about abortion in the G8 initiative.
And will we see more things like that, do you think? The canceling of funding to abortion?
Well, actually, I mean, abortion is funded under provincial governments, so I'm not sure that there's a canceling of funding going on. I think what we'll see is Harper's preferred policy line is incrementalism. He announced this when he announced this policy outreach to social conservatives in 2003. He said, be patient. You know, there'll be no big dramatic moves. And I think by nature, he's a cautious person. He's admitted as such. But I think what we will see is slow erosion of things. He doesn't want a big polarizing issue like abortion on the domestic stage. But we may see private members' bills, as there's one out there now from a Manitoba MP that just chips away at the status of abortion now, which is there are no limits whatsoever on it. And so we'll probably see increased limits like that. If he does win a majority, he would want to win another one, or he would want the legacy of his party to keep on winning. So he'll be careful about positioning himself too much. But it's the first time in his entire tenure that I hear journalists referring to social conservatives as his base. That's a new development, and they're using that term because they're seeing how like he is George Bush in pursuing this particular tactic.
When a guy like Charles McVitie says that his people sat on their hands in 2008 and denied Harper a majority, can we believe him?
Well, I think that many religious and social conservatives were really turned off by Harper because he had thrown over two policies they had counted on. One was the bill for film tax credit to remove tax credits for films that were deemed morally offensive that Charles McVitie beat the drums for, and another was a private member's bill on abortion. And so they were really miffed. It's hard to tell whether they did stay home because so many people stayed home in that election. Nobody wanted an election, and the apathy and low voter turnout speaks to that. But certainly it drove home the fact that Harper had to shore up some base, and he couldn't change his economic policies in this current climate, so what he did was appeal to social conservatives. What I did find was that the mainstream media quotes Charles McDeedy all the time on these issues. He's an easy guy to get hold of for reporters, but he isn't actually the most representative or the closest to the government.
Who is?
Well, I think there are a number of these organizations, such as the Institute of Marriage and the Family, which is headed by Dave Quist, who worked in Harper's office formerly, and who was a legislative assistant to MPs on the Hill. There are many other organizers, and he has the former head of Focus on the Family Canada, Daryl Reed, as his deputy chief of staff now in the PMO. And another prominent Christian educator, Paul Wilson, who used to head something called the Laurentian Leadership Center, which is a branch of the of Trinity Western University in Ottawa. He's in the Prime Minister's office. So he has a lot of other more influential evangelicals who make less noise than Charles McDeedy.
Yeah, and in the book you talk a lot about these connections that a lot of these organizations have with their American counterparts. You think that it's a cause for concern as well?
Well, I think that they would love to have the success on the political stage that the American religious right did. It's essentially taken over the Republican Party, and we have the results now. Some of those former organizers or the organizers of the Tea Party movement. So they speak with people like Charles McBeedy speak with great admiration about their American counterparts, and of course, something like the Institute of Marriage and the Family, it's a branch plant of James Dobson's Focus on the Family, which had huge influence in the Bush administration. So whether or not there are actual lines of funding, which everybody I think thought that I would be trying to trace, but Canada has pretty strict charitable laws that we are, these organizations have been careful to respect. It's less, it's more a question of influence and emulation.
Now, you've been in Canada, back in Canada after a stint abroad for a few years now, right?
Yes.
And so you have some sense of what Canadians think and who they are. From what you've heard and seen after this book's come out, do you think this will change how we think?
Well, what's interesting is that I was warning in the book that if in fact an electoral strategy that uses religion as a wedge issue is pursued, we have to be prepared for the consequences, which is a more polarized, vitriolic level of debate as we've seen happen after 30 years in the States. What I didn't believe was that it would happen within a week of my book coming out. I have people calling me a bigot, an anti-Semite, because I merely detail how the Canada's policy toward the Middle East was changed and influenced by some of these groups. And so we already have a level of debate that I never dreamed would exist in Canada. So people like Ezra and Levant and David Frum, Ezra Levant, who brought Ann Coulter up here to Canada, and David Frum, who has spent all these years in Washington, are sort of proving my point, but a little faster than I worried about or hoped.
Now, do you think it's because they have louder voices, or do you think that the country has changed?
Well, I think that we are changing, and I think a lot of people cherish the idea of an old, tolerant, moderate Canada that is very different from the United States, and thanks to communications and all sorts of other influences, including immigration, we're not the Canada that a lot of the mainstream media thinks and a lot of urban Canadians think. I think that there's a much wider spectrum of ideas, and they're learning to take their place in the public square. I'm not saying this is bad. People of faith ought to be included and ought to have a voice. The question is, when religion is a calculated motivator for setting policy to build a party, what are we getting into? Shouldn't we be having this debate about how much religiosity we want in public life?
This is a fascinating book, and it's been a fascinating conversation. I appreciate it, and continued good luck with the book.
Thank you very much, Joseph.
You're welcome. The book is called The Armageddon Factor, The Rise of Christian Nationalism in Canada. It's published by Random House. Its author, Marcy McDonald, on the line here from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.